Voters across the nation are concerned and fearful about the economy. Many worry about losing their homes and their life savings, and they're also nervous about the future of their jobs. According to a report by the U.S. Department of Labor, 760,000 jobs have been lost in the past 9 months. For some Americans who still have jobs, the pressures they face on a daily basis are as difficult to bear as job insecurity. That's according to Stephen Greenhouse, a labor and workplace correspondent for the New York Times. He's also the author of a new book called The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. He went behind the scenes to tell the stories of white and blue-collar workers, middle-class and low-income wage earners, young people who can't get ahead, and elderly employees who can't afford to retire. Greenhouse is in our New York Bureau. Welcome.
Very nice to be here, Leanne.
Give us some brief thumbnail sketches of the people you interviewed and the problems they faced.
For instance, I wrote about Michael Johnson, a security guard in Los Angeles. He worked more than a dozen years as a security guard in L.A., and he was just making $10 an hour. So he took a second full-time job, and as a result, he leaves home each morning at 6 a.m., he gets back from his second job each night at 11 p.m., so all week long he doesn't see his kids. I wrote about Myra Bronstein, a software engineer who worked outside Seattle. One day, Myra and 17 other software engineers were called into a conference room, and the human resources director said, "Sorry, you're being laid off. You're being fired." And they were shocked because the company was doing well, and they were working very hard. To add insult to injury, the human resources director said, "If you want to receive any severance pay whatsoever, you have to agree to spend the next 4 weeks training the workers from India who will be replacing you."
So if, as one presidential candidate says, American workers are the most productive in the world, why are they being treated so badly?
American workers are wonderfully productive, and they do work very hard, and I do make that point. But companies are under huge pressure, and corporate managers are under huge pressure to minimize their costs because they're trying often to get their share prices as high as possible and get their profits as high as possible. So CEOs at the top of companies also often pressure lower-level managers to minimize their payroll. So a lot of lower-level managers, restaurant managers, store managers, will cheat their workers to get their payroll below the designated level.
What about unions? Don't they help?
Unions help, but unions are far weaker than they had been in decades past. Nowadays, unions represent just 7.5% of workers in the private sector. A half century ago in the 1950s, they represented nearly 40% of workers in the private sector. And back then, unions could really pressure managers to treat their workers better. Unions could pressure companies to be much more generous. Unions are trying now to grow again, but they're finding it very hard because companies fight so hard against unionization drive. When I've traveled around the country, many workers, especially low-wage workers, janitors, nursing home aides, home care aides, they're very, very enthusiastic about the idea of joining a union to help lift them up. Yet it's often hard for them to join a union because managers, you know, twist their arms and pressure them very hard not to join a union.
When you were writing this book, you were examining it during a decade in which the American economy was thriving. And one of the points that you make is that even though there were corporate profits and CEOs' salaries were soaring, wages languished for most workers. You finished this book before the current financial crisis. Will the problems that you outline now get worse for American workers?
It's funny, even before this recession started, a lot of workers were saying the nation's already in recession because they felt that their paychecks weren't going anywhere. They were being pressured to pay more for health insurance. They saw their problems with their 401ks. And now I'm sad to say, Leanne, things might get even worse.
Why isn't the American worker part of the national conversation about the economy?
That's a good question and a tough question. I think, you know, part of what's been happening is the United States as a nation has romanticized, you know, the high-tech wizards, the great guys from Google, you know, great investors like Warren Buffett, great CEOs like Bill Gates, and they don't see the average worker as so important. Fortunately, you know, with the advent of the presidential campaign, the candidates in the news media have begun paying much more attention. So hopefully, after Inauguration Day, whoever is elected next president, whoever is elected to the next Congress, will continue focusing on the many problems that the nation's workers face, including stagnating wages, 46 million Americans without health insurance, and, again, retirement security for 145 million workers.
Stephen Greenhouse is a labor and workplace correspondent for The New York Times. His new book is called The Big Squeeze, Tough Times for the American Worker. It's published by Knopf. He joined us from our New York studio. Thanks so much, Stephen.
Thanks very much, Leanne. Pleasure to be here.
Coming up, one of our listeners talks about how the weak economy has been affecting her life. She had a well-paying job and good benefits until she got laid off, and she's been struggling to make ends meet ever since.
I've had three layoffs in the past maybe 8 years based on economic downturn. Each time it has taken away all of my financial reserves because just the basic costs, food and gasoline, have gone up.
Stay tuned as our series about how middle-class Americans are coping with the economic crisis continues. We asked you to write to us about how your lives have been affected, and we've received dozens of responses. Go to npr.org to see what people have been saying.